One of the difficulties that many people have with the Christian faith, as they have been taught it, is that it seems to have plenty to offer in the past, and it promises plenty in the future, but it doesn't always seem to have much help to offer in the midst of the struggles of day-to-day life in the here and now. We read stories of the early church, and it sounds as though people were immediately set on fire by the Holy Spirit in ways that healed all their illnesses and brokennesses and filled them with courage and power to do amazing things in the face of overwhelming odds. And we are left wondering why it seldom, if ever, seems to be that way for us. I would have, maybe welcomed a miraculous sermon creation intervention this week because I was on leave and didn't want to write a new sermon and thought I shouldn't really do a listening circle sermon when we're doing listening circles in the retreat in the afternoon. No miraculous intervention came, and I have resorted to recycling a sermon that I have preached in the past, which Acacia will probably tell you is the Harry Potter sermon. Some of you may remember that, but it's a long time ago, so maybe you won't. When we hear promises about the coming kingdom of God, sometimes they seem a bit like promises of those kind of miraculous interventions that might miraculously give me a brand new sermon at such a time. We can be thrilled by the vision of a world in which the enemies of life are defeated and there's justice and peace and plenty for all. And God wipes away every tear from our eyes and welcomes us to the great banquet of life. But in the midst of trying to hold your life together in the here and now, promises of how it will all be one day can seem like little more than an escapist fantasy. They might numb the pain a bit, but they don't make much difference to anything real. This season of Advent that begins today calls us to prepare ourselves in anticipation of the coming of the Messiah. In part, it's a preparation for the season of Christmas, the celebration of the birth of Jesus as a human baby some 20 centuries ago. But you probably noticed that today's Bible readings said absolutely nothing at all about that. Advent always kicks off with a set of readings that call us to look forward to the coming of the Messiah in glory to put all things right. And so in our gospel reading tonight, we heard Jesus promising that we will see the new human coming on a cloud with great power and glory. But if those two things are what Advent is about, then doesn't it just compound the problem that I spoke about a minute ago? Doesn't it just end up offering us sweet sentiments about the past, little baby born, and pie in the sky when we die? And leave us with very little of any practical use for the living of our lives in the here and now. It seems to me that part of the reason that we've got ourselves into such dead-end thinking is that we've partially fallen for the message that's peddled by the doomsday fanatics. And we've heard Jesus's apocalyptic descriptions of global chaos as a single defined future event, connected only to the great and final coming of the Messiah in glory. And we stand on tiptoes, craning our necks to try and catch a glimpse of it coming. So we inadvertently join with these doomsday fanatics in concluding that although various earthquakes, tsunamis, wars, plagues, and disasters sound like the sort of apocalyptic chaos that Jesus foreshadowed, they can't have been the ones he was talking about after all, because they've come and gone and faded from memory, and the second coming still hasn't occurred. In tonight's gospel reading, we hear Jesus speak of how people will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world. And that sounds like a description of our own world, beset by fear and foreboding of pandemic that keeps mutating and climate crisis. But we don't feel any closer to the kingdom being fulfilled on earth as in heaven. We hear Jesus say that reading the signs of the times is just like predicting the onset of summer by watching the flowers bloom. But time after time, those who predict the end of the world and the coming of the kingdom have been disappointed, and we stop listening and watching. But perhaps we have been far too one-dimensional in our reading of these passages and in our understanding of the message of this Advent season. Perhaps we have been mistaken to think that the terrors that Jesus pointed to were not the terrors that we face. And perhaps we've been mistaken to push our expectations for the coming of the Messiah into the past and into the future. There's no doubt that the first hearers of these words from Jesus understood the apocalyptic descriptions to refer to the chaos that was going on in their world at that time, and to the fear and foreboding that was gripping them and those around them in their day. So perhaps Jesus is not referring to one specific period that's off in the future somewhere. Perhaps he's also calling us to expect the Messiah to come to us with real help in the midst of what we face now, and to be ready for what he will do among us and through us now. One of the Harry Potter books, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, provides a powerful image which I think relates quite strongly to this idea. Of course, there are a few Christians who think that we should ban Harry Potter because they see it all as being about witchcraft, but for some reason the similarities to the Narnia Chronicles don't bother them. The Harry Potter stories are just as capable of a very Christian reading. In The Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry is being threatened by Dementors. Listen to how one of his teachers describes them. Dementors are among the foulest creatures that walk this earth. They infest the darkest, filthiest places. They glory in decay and despair. They drain peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around them. Even the muggles, that's us non-magical humans, even the muggles feel their presence, though they can't see them. Get too near a Dementor, and every good feeling, every happy memory will be sucked out of you. If it can, the Dementor will feed on you long enough to reduce you to something like itself, soulless and evil. You will be left with nothing but the worst experiences of your life. The people that Jeremiah was preaching to in our first reading felt like they had been done over by Dementors. They'd been marched into exile with their homeland destroyed. They felt like every good feeling and happy memory was being drained out of them. It felt as though the air they breathed was lifeless and hopeless. When Luke recorded the words we heard from Jesus, the Romans had sacked Jerusalem and the temple was in ruins, and people were again feeling like they'd been attacked by Dementors. And today, even among those who have not been personally touched by tsunamis or wars or devastating droughts or terrorist attacks, many people know that feeling only too well. Not only have the restrictions of the pandemic been crushing for many people, but even before the pandemic, depression was apparently in epidemic proportions in Western society. We might not see the Dementors, but we know that soulless, lifeless feeling when all colour and hope seems to empty from our world and leave us cold and terrified. J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, has said that the idea for the Dementors came from her own struggles with depression. But even those of us who would not be diagnosed as suffering depression know that there are times when it seems that Dementors are bearing down on us. Because of the threat of the Dementors, one of Harry Potter's teachers, Professor Lupin, sets out to teach him the only defense there is against them, the Patronus charm, which he describes as a kind of anti-Dementor, a guardian that acts as a shield between you and the Dementors. In order to activate the Patronus charm, Harry has to concentrate all his might on the strongest, happiest memory he possesses, and then call out the words Expecto Patronum, which are significant words. They sound a lot like an Advent prayer because literally they mean expect the help of your father, your guardian. At the crucial moment, when Harry and his wounded godfather are about to be destroyed by a swarm of Dementors, he's able to cry out, Expecto Patronum! And from his wand comes a dazzling, brilliant light in the form of a great stag that charges at the Dementors who flee before its light. The one really powerful, happy memory that Harry was able to focus into the Patronus charm was the memory of being greatly loved by his father and mother who had died to save his life when he was still a baby. And while fiercely holding to the knowledge of that love, that drove away the Dementors. Jesus says, be alert at all times, praying that you may have the strength to escape all these things that will take place. People will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the new human coming in a cloud with power and great glory. So stand up and raise your heads because your redemption is near. The end times experience is not just a special time in the future. It has happened before. It'll happen again. But it is also in the midst of the terrors and turmoil and struggles of now. Yes, there will be a time when everything is fulfilled. But the experience of the one who comes then is an experience that we are to expect and to look for now. Expecto Patronum. Expect the help of the Messiah now. The Messiah who was crucified and the Messiah who comes to make all things new and the Messiah who comes to drive off our Dementors and lift our heads now, these are all the same Messiah with the same love and the same commitment to us. But just as Harry found it enormously difficult to summon the Patronus charm, so we must recognize how fiercely determined we will often need to be to recognize and access the help that the Messiah offers to us. I've heard people in this congregation, when beset by Dementors, complain that they never experience God's closeness and they never experience any community or any support in this congregation, when I know for a fact that they have been a dinner guest at another member of the congregation within the last week. As Alison used to remind me, we often used to remind us, as Alison used to remind us, we often resist recognizing what God gives us because we are trapped in a futile wish that God would offer it to us in some other form. And we are easy prey for the Dementors when we cling to one fixed expectation of what the help should look like. And we refuse to see any help that doesn't match our wishes. When it feels as though something is draining the peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around you, and every good feeling and every happy memory is being sucked out of you, cling fiercely to a good experience, a good memory. Cling fiercely to the knowledge that you are loved by one who gives his life to save yours. Focus all your energy on that knowledge. And cry out to God, expect the help of your Father, your Messiah. But know that the light that comes may come just as quietly and unobtrusively as the birth of a baby in a shed behind a pub in some far-flung place. But the light comes. Expecto Patronum. The light comes.